The Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. Ailis Forfar is dancing and looked like the chair was on shaky footing there. Yeah. You look like you lost your balance.
Almost fell over.
J.D. Bunkus is here. Vic's got the aux cord. And we have to bring our next guest on with an apology of sorts. We're joined at this point by the fourth member of the team who, I don't know, maybe he doesn't want to be on the team anymore after after last week. It's Charles Davis. He's got Bengals Raiders on Sunday on CBS. Charles, good morning.
Good morning, and I'd love to know why there's an apology and why you're wondering whether I want to be a fourth member.
Before they say anything?
I'm in it for life.
Before they say anything?
I'm in it for life.
I don't apologize because I wasn't here, Charles. Obviously, you noticed my absence.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when I go away.
We felt it.
This is what happens when I'm away.
Well, Charles, this is an apology and a happy belated birthday.
Aw, yep. Happy birthday!
Oh. Thank you.
I saw you getting you're getting the cupcake on the broadcast.
Yeah,
and
we felt terrible.
Yeah,
they couldn't even say happy birthday.
Well, you guys, no one was supposed to know. That wasn't, you know, I didn't walk in and go, "Now let's everyone understand, my birthday is next week. I expect cupcakes, kudos. I expect at least 10 mentions." It never came up. Somehow someone knew, and they were very, very kind and very nice to do what they did. So we took the cupcake. We split it 18 different ways, made sure it lasted, and it all worked out. That was very, very nice. But again, I'm still in the dark about the apology. I don't understand why does there need to be an apology.
Because we didn't know it was your birthday.
You're just a good, I guess you're just
a
good.
Oh, please.
You seem like a birthday hider,
though. Happy birthday. We're sorry.
Are you a birthday hider?
Well, I appreciate that. Let me just help you. And everyone's off the hook. And let me tell you why, okay? I don't remember anyone's birthdays. Okay? So it's one of my huge failings. It doesn't mean I don't love you, 365. But on that special day that's yours, when everyone tells you happy birthday, and I go, "Oh my God, it was Ailish's birthday." And they're like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Oh, my bad. Happy birthday." And I hope you're still going to be cool with me, but I am terrible at that. So we're all good.
Luckily for you, all three of us have birthdays that fall in the NFL offseason. Mm-hmm. So you'll be in the clear anyway.
Good. Well, we'll solve it right now. You ready? Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
You. Now I know you're not a birthday guy. Like, you're such a non-birthday guy, you don't even know the birthday song. You're like, you just, how does it go again? Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Ah, you know the rest. Ah, that's how it goes.
Charles,
I had a choir teacher in high school, Mrs. Bythema Bagley, who told me I was going to be in the choir.
Oh.
And I said, "Mrs. Bagley, I cannot sing." She said, "I'm well aware of that." And I said, "Why am I going to be in the choir?" And she said, "Because I need taller people to balance out our look." And I was like, "Yeah, but what's the point if I can't sing?" She said, "The point is, I need you for the look. I want my choir to look a certain way. You will come to choir practice. You will show up. You will know the words. But you will sing not a single note. You will lip sync everything. And if I hear one note come out of your mouth, I will fail you. But if you do it the way I tell you, your grade will be good. See you at practice 3 o'clock.
I love that.
That was all she wrote. And I tell you this story. It's the absolute truth. Mrs. Bagley was a force of nature, okay? At our school, when Mrs. Bagley came around the corner, it wasn't kids that dove under desks. It was kids. It was other teachers. It was administrators. Everyone. Mrs. Bagley wanted something. It was done. It was finished. And I remember I went home to protest to my dad. And I went, "Dad, Mrs. Bagley." He goes, "Yep, you're going to enjoy choir." And that was the end of it. He said, "You're going to enjoy choir." And my dad was a teacher at the school. He wasn't touching that to save his life. He said, "Make sure you know every note you up there. And as I understand it, you're lip syncing. Don't say a word." So, okay, you got it. And it's true. I did get the A, though.
Mrs. Bagley went on to manage Milli Vanilli, by the way. Sunday, I'm sitting there. I'm watching Browns Patriots. And I'm feeling bad about us missing your birthday. Hmm. And then you're dropping Hannibal references, these Roman wartime references. It was a lot. And then because of that game, I felt better prepared for the Pats last night, of course, coming off that huge win against Cleveland. And then last night, another big victory for that team. What were your impressions of last night, and how confident are you growing in this New England team that's strung off 5 wins in a row now, 4 of them pretty quality?
Yeah, and that's I love the last part you just said, 4 of them pretty quality, because that was the issue early in the season. Remember the start they got off to? When you looked back, the teams that they beat were sub-500 teams. The teams they lost to were 500 or better. So you said, okay, this tells you who they are. Now they're starting to beat teams that we thought were going to be really good in the preseason. We thought they're beating teams that are pretty good right now. Atlanta, I don't put in that category. But I will say this. Somehow Atlanta's won 4 games and beat a New Orleans team at the time. We thought, oh, boy, remember New Orleans beat Tampa. So there's something going on a little strange in this league. But what's not strange is we're seeing New England revert to being New England again. And I'm telling you, the New England-Buffalo sprint to the finish now, it's getting very intriguing in how we're looking at it. We don't know how it's going to play out. Buffalo is still the better football team by roster.
That's right.
Okay? When you look at them and you say to yourself, okay, at this position, at that position, the way Buffalo is playing defense this year, which is different, all right, and should provide them a leg up. But as confident as New England is, and there's still the specter of New England being New England, that's starting to loom again, like, oh, boy, Belichick's got something going. That's worth something every Sunday. Yeah, that's a good team. And what about last night, though, guys? 3 quarterbacks on the Atlanta roster, 4 interceptions. Yeah. All 3 of them threw at least one.
It was beautiful.
Amazing.
It was beautiful. And so I wish that Patriots fans weren't Patriots fans, because I want to jump on this bandwagon so hard. Like, I love this team. And I love teams that get the best out of their personnel. When you have – and this brings me to the Mac Jones thing. Like, those 3 quarterbacks that threw those interceptions, I'm not thinking about them today. I'm thinking about Mac Jones. And it's this whole nature versus nurture thing, right, with him. And when it comes to quarterback development, we've got quarterbacks who are in really tough situations, like Trevor Lawrence. How are we supposed to really evaluate this, right? He's on a Jaguars team that – really doesn't have a lot around him, that hasn't done much. With Mac Jones, they bring him in this year. He's the quarterback that apparently they want the entire time. And they start him off very, very slow. His responsibilities are very, very small. The team still runs the football just about half the time. They set him up for manageable third downs all the time. They don't throw the ball very often to the middle of the field. They stay out of those trouble zones. They throw to the outside. It's a lot of checkdowns, but that's the team putting him in good spots. But it's also the quarterback making great plays. And so I'm at this point, Charles, with Mac Jones, where I'm really trying to decipher just how good he is versus how much of it is Josh McDaniels, Bill Belichick, and what the Patriots have afforded him when it comes to roster and play calling. What do you make of Mac Jones? And is it so far that we're actually just starting to maybe even reevaluate or change a little bit of the way that we perceive quarterbacks and the way that they're handled coming out of the first round?
I love this. I thought for a second there you were going to go full Christopher Walken on me and do nature versus nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
Remember Lodge, nature always wins.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So everything that you pointed out, when you assess it, sometimes as a young quarterback coming out of college, it's where you go, which might be better for you than going at the top of the draft. If you're Trevor Lawrence, and let's say Trevor Lawrence went to New England at 15, which would have been a major surprise, right? Mm. But let's say he's the one at 15, yeah, and Mac Jones is at 1 with Jacksonville. Is Jacksonville's record now New England's? No, it's not, because there's so many other factors that go into it. New England got the guy that they wanted with the way that they like to play, their style. His ability to come in and adapt quickly, learn the playbook, mesh with his teammates, show his leadership skills, play to what his strengths are, which New England is doing very, very well. If you're Trevor Lawrence, there's so many other things that go into it that make it more difficult. Justin Fields in Chicago, a difficult situation for him. Mac Jones would be going through a lot of difficulty there as well. But this fits everything that you said spot on. It fits perfectly. But this kid is ready to go, and I'll put it to you this way. He has enough of that chip on his shoulder thing that sometimes we get weary about talking about, like, oh, God, another person. Oh, they doubted me. Oh, boy, here we go. But go back to all of his time frame and how he was coached. And I said in the broadcast on Sunday, his high school coach, Corky Rogers, a legend in the state of Florida. He passed away a few years ago. Very tight on the reins in how he controlled things. Nick Saban, I'd say you'd say the same thing at Alabama. Remember, he was told, don't go to Alabama, you'll never play. There are guys there. Tungavaloa is there. A kid named Hertz is there. Don't go there. He went anyway. Waited his turn, figured it out. And then he ends up with Bill Belichick. Again, I would say that he has a little bit of control of a football team. This kid told us, I love the gunslinger quarterbacks growing up. I love the Brett Favre types. But he never played for people who allowed him to be that, which is probably a good thing because his game is predicated on control, him being under control, him making the right decision, doing those things. I think if he tried to play a freewheeling kind of backyard type football, he wouldn't be nearly the quarterback he is now because his athletic gifts don't allow him to do that. So it's kind of a thing. I want to be one way, but I'm better being the other. And fortunately for him, he's played for people who have made him be the other, and he's maximized it.
So you talk about the Patriots and the Bills in this tight race. Obviously, as a Bills fan over here, I'm getting a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Getting a little nervous. And this week, we got Bills versus Colts. Colts haven't lost a game by more than 7 points since week 3. They also haven't lost in regulation since that week. And now the Bills' offense is kind of on the other end of the spectrum. They're crushing teams by huge spreads. So my question to you is which is going to give this week? I feel like the Bills are either going to lose huge or win big. And I can't decide which one I'm feeling.
Listen. The way I see this game shaping up is Buffalo has improved on defense and it's held up over multiple weeks. Like at the beginning of the year, it's like, oh, okay, is this really a new Buffalo? Because they put so much emphasis on it. You know, they drafted the pass rushers, Rousseau and Boogie Basham. You know, they wanted to get better at the back end. They re-signed Matt Milano at linebacker and an excellent coverage guy. You name it, right? Mm-hmm. To me, where this game's going to come down is, can that group on defense that has gotten so much better throughout this season, can they, will they hold up when the Colts decide to run it 30, 35 times? Because I think that's where their Colts formula is for success. It starts with Jonathan Taylor, and then it allows Carson Wentz to be a little more comfortable, similar to what you guys were talking about with Mac Jones, being a little more comfortable throwing off a play action, manageable third downs, things of that nature. And Wentz has gotten better as the season has gone on. He's gotten healthier, more comfortable again, the whole deal. But to me, the Colts' identity is Jonathan Taylor beating you up in the run game. And if they don't play to that, and I think Frank Reich is a very smart football coach. I think that's where they're headed. And they're playing their best football now after a brutally slow start. To me, that's where the game is. Yeah, I think Buffalo's offense is back clicking, you know, all those things. But this is the one where I know that they're ranked high on defense. I've got to go with my strength and test it if I'm Indianapolis. And that's where this game comes. And if Indianapolis goes out and doesn't, you know, seek to check that identity and the game is still in the balance, then to me that's a mistake on Indianapolis' part. Because, guys, last week we had New England and Cleveland. Cleveland was the number 3 ranked rush defense in the league coming into the game. I questioned it going in, talked about it early, because I saw Pittsburgh run the ball well against them with some power runs, double teams, the whole deal. And Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator from New England, was like, yeah, I'm going to take my 250-pound running back, Ramondre Stevenson. We're going to test it too. How did that work out? It worked out really well. So sometimes the numbers aren't exactly what you think. You've got to go with what you know best. And I think people are going to play Cleveland now are going to ignore the numbers and go, okay, let's test it that way. Indianapolis, I think, is cut the same way.
We're talking to Charles Davis of CBS. Charles, you've got Bengals Raiders on Sunday. The Raiders with a little bit of a slide here, 2 losses in a row coming out of their bye. And Cincinnati coming out of a bye as well, coming off of 2 pretty bad losses to the Jets and the Browns. What are you looking for from Cincinnati in terms of a bounce back here? And what do they need to show you, to get back kind of in that fringe playoff conversation in terms of You know, are they ready for that, and are they in the mix there?
Yeah, I think what they need to show me is, and show all of us, really, well, let's be honest, they need to show themselves that the early season success when they were freewheeling it, when no one had any expectations on them, is much more who they are as opposed to, wow, Cincinnati, you know how quickly we start this sentence, ready? If the playoffs were to begin today, the Cincinnati Bengals would be the number one seed in the AFC. That's what we do, right? We're media people, and we did it. Cincinnati, after they beat Baltimore, was the number one seed in the AFC if the playoffs were to begin today, and we know the playoffs don't begin for another 8-9 weeks. But that's how we do it. And all of a sudden, Cincinnati's like, ooh, whoa, you're all looking at us. They lose to the Jets, as you mentioned. Cleveland works them. They get the open week. This was the time to exhale. Get back to saying, hey, we do think we're a pretty good football team. We got to quit worrying about the spotlight now and just worry about playing. And I think that these two losses have reduced the spotlight. Let's see if they can get back to doing it. And if you're Joe Burrow, their quarterback, don't worry about the 11 interceptions. People make a lot about that. Forget it. He's still making the right decisions. He's had the number of balls bounce off a receiver's hands or guys slip on routes. It's not that it's not all his fault, but not every one of those 11 interceptions is on him. Still be the aggressive Joe Burrow we saw earlier this year. And Ja'Marr Chase, I think he'll get back on track too. He's had two kind of subpar games, but boy, is he a breathtaking talent at wide receiver.
Yeah. I bought a little too hard on the Bengals after the Ravens win. And then I watched, you know, the Ravens are a good football team, mm-hmm. and I like a lot about them, but they don't tackle very well, and there are just some inconsistencies where you can all of a sudden lose to the Dolphins. I was there for that Dolphins game. It was...
Yes, you were. I heard about that. You were there for that Dolphins game.
I was there for two Ravens games in a row.
It was a warm night.
It was awesome.
And they were, you know, we were worried if you were going to get back. I'm just glad you're back. That's all I cared about. But think of it this way. Think of it this way, too. This season, the New York Jets, who none of us would say are a good football team. Uh-huh. There's just no way, all right? Yeah, we enjoyed the Mike White experience. I had a very good friend who was like, Mike White, maybe Mike White should be the starter the rest of the year. And I was like, pump the brakes.
That's how bad it is for Jets fans. They get 2 weeks of halfway decent quarterback play, and they're like, it's our guy.
Right. I love Mike White. Yeah. All right. I loved him coming out of college. Great young man. But never did I see him as that guy. Right. So he has the monster game. They upset Cincinnati. He gets hurt against Indianapolis on the Thursday night. So we're not really sure what's going on. Right. Then he comes back. How many interceptions? Four? Okay. Yeah. So it comes back to, you know, it comes back to level. Not necessarily that he's a four interception guy, but he also wasn't the same guy that we saw just absolutely destroy, you know, Cincinnati along the way. Let's pump the brakes on some of this. But the Jets have beaten Cincinnati when they were highly regarded. They beat maybe the hottest team in the league, which is the Tennessee Titans. You know, so it's that kind of a weird year. You know, Miami, we thought would be pressing for a playoff spot in the preseason. They've been not very good. They jump on a team that was winning the AFC North and was one of the highly rated teams in the Baltimore Ravens. We can go right down the line. New Orleans is in a little bit of a skid. They just beat Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. It's a very strange year. I think we all need to just get used to it.
He's got Bengals Raiders on Sunday on CBS. He's the fourth member of our team, and he does not remember your birthday.
Yeah.
Charles Davis, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning. We always appreciate it.
Thanks, Charles.
Hey, I appreciate you guys letting me be on with you. Remember, we are the awesome foursome. Don't let anyone else tell you any different, and never once doubt that we're going to stick together. Okay? We will.
Thanks, Charles.
Teary-eyed.
I know. It's so good. So sweet, Charles. Thank you.
Now I feel even worse about forgetting his birthday. Or not forgetting, just not knowing it.
Is he not like the best way to have a Friday? Like
he's great.
He's great.
And, like, I didn't get to dig into it more, but his call, like that Patriots-Browns game started getting out of control. Mm-hmm. And he was like
45-0.
He was so deep in his bag of references and stuff. And it's great.
He's also calling us from Las Vegas, where it is, four in the morning? Three in the morning?
Yeah.
You know what it is for me? Is that he always gets one of the premier games, right?
He's
tells you a lot.
Yeah. He's one of the premier
guys.
He's
the guy.
But whenever he's speaking, whenever you're talking, I feel like I'm watching one of the games, and it makes me feel like I'm watching football, which I love, and so I feel good.
Mm-hmm. You know? Makes you like cozy in the chair, yeah. Like you're on the couch.
It's like I'm ready. He's telling me something, and he does his breakdowns this way too, right? Mm-hmm. Where he paints a picture, mm-hmm. and he's very, very good at that. And so I love when he starts to paint the picture about Mac Jones, and I'm sitting there going,
yeah.
I'm watching the Patriots play right now.
Like I'm all in on Mac Jones now.
You know, if it wasn't, Patriots fans, listen to this. If it wasn't for you, I'd be on the bandwagon this year. You'd be the team I'm bandwagoning on.
Yeah.
I love this Patriots team.
Yeah, can never bandwagon a Boston team, though.
No, the thing. It's just that, but it's not even that. It's the Canadian fans of them.
Yeah.
They're the worst ones. You guys wanted to be Boston sports fans. And not only did you want to do it.
You decided that.
I know. And then they're the worst, too, because they're like, I can give you like a million different reasons why Patriots fans are the worst. One is that they're bandwagon royalty, right? You're not from the area. You cheered for the Patriots. You're bandwagon royalty. Number two, as soon as your team stunk, you all jumped in your bandwagony ways onto the Bucks, and you celebrated that Tom Brady Super Bowl not as like, oh man, I can't believe we lost Tom Brady, that sucks so bad, like any normal franchise would do. They went, Tommy's our guy. Oh, we get a Super Bowl, hang another banner in New England because it's a Tommy's our guy. No, brutal.
I like that accent got progressively more southy as you went along. It was good.
Oh, Tommy, terrific. We love Tommy. And then there's the people that are, again, from here that they're putting it on. They're like, oh, I go to one Pats game every 4 years. It's brutal. I hate them. Oh, I hate them so much.
I like that the Canadian Pats fans have adopted the Boston accent.
Yeah, they do. That's because they go down there. They're like, oh, Wes Welka. I'm like, no, you dorks, you losers. Nobody from Boston likes you. You're not part of them. Anyway, I hate Patriots fans. They're the worst. They're the worst. They're the worst. They're the worst. I honestly can't think of one fan base that's worse than Patriots fans. Like, tell me, off the top of your head, who's worse than Patriots fans? They jumped on the Buccaneers bandwagon. No shame.
Bruins, like Boston in general.
Bruins
Red
fans,
Sox.
I like. I gotta say, I respect them because it's like it's the gritty team of Boston. You know, it's they play the Dropkick Murphys, and I'm into it. Yeah, I'm into it. Speaking of the Dropkick Murphys, this is a little offshoot, but I had a reconnection with Flogging Molly.
Nice.
Over like a couple weeks ago, I had a reconnection where I was like, yeah, and those are more for Blake. Do you know there?
Yeah.
Okay, you do? All right.
No. There's no chance she knows there.
I was shocked. Anyway, it was just very nice. I listened to Drunken Lullabies the whole way through, and I was like, damn, this is really good.
I saw Flogging Molly at a bar in Cambridge that was at the time called the Lil Bighorn Saloon.
Okay.
Which is now a Boston Pizza.
I know Flogging Molly. They're the Irish American 7-piece Celtic band formed in Los Angeles.
Celtic band.
Oh, yeah, 1997. Yeah,
they're not the Boston Celtics. Kevin McHale on drums.
Led by Irish vocalist Dave King, formerly the hard rock band Fastway.
Yeah, I love this.
I know them very well.
I love this. So, you know what time it is.
Yum, yum, yum.
It's time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. So, this is what I want everybody to chew on a little bit here.
I'm hungry.
Who is the best team in the AFC East? Is it what could have been my Patriots, or is it Ailish's Buffalo Bills? And this is all I want to say about this game this weekend. This is sort of we don't really learn much about the Patriots. Like, we learn that Bill Belichick is good and that, hey, he'll put a bad offense with Matt Ryan in the ground, in the wet, wet mud. Because that's a mismatch of all mismatches. There's no more Julio Jones. There's no more Calvin Ridley. This ain't your daddy's Falcons. This is a bad Falcons team. They didn't have Cordero Patterson. You know it's bad when you lose Cordero Patterson and the whole football world goes, oh, no.
Can Todd Sharp step up?
Not the punt returner from the Vikings. So I'm looking at this weekend and Jonathan Taylor and this Bills team. And if the Bills can slow down that rushing attack, if they can slow down Jonathan Taylor, if they can really just say, no, we're putting Carson Wentz in 3rd and 7 routinely, the Bills are going to win this game, and they're going to win it the way that you said it. Yeah. I think they're going to dominate it because Carson Wentz can't hang with Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happening here. But if you're a Patriots fan and you look at this game and they can slow down Jonathan Taylor, they hold him to say like a sub 75-yard rushing game, you're feeling damn good as a Bills fan. You're going, okay, We're ready for New England right now. We're ready for those two games down the stretch. We're ready to take this division. We're ready to have home field. We're not worried about this. If Jonathan Taylor runs all over them, boy, you better start to fear Bill Belichick. You better start to feel Stevenson. You better start to fear Damian Harris, who's breaking tackles yesterday. You're starting to lean towards the Patriots. Just something to chew on.
So your question is difficult for me because...
You're staring into the abyss right now.
If you would have asked me this at the beginning of the season, hands down, I would have said the Bills are the best team in the AFC East. And they proved that throughout the first couple weeks when Josh Allen was hot, the team was rolling, and they've been a little bit inconsistent since when they lost to that abysmal team that we won't mention. And they had
what was it like in here?
Don't talk about it. Then they had another bad showing, and I haven't felt confident since. And now you look at the Patriots, who are on a 5-game winning streak, which is scary. They're 5-0 on the road, which is also scary, and they are definitely the best team right now. So I have flip-flopped in terms of who I have the most faith in, but I think the most important thing is what you mentioned. This weekend kind of sets the stage for who's the real deal and who has had good showings that aren't consistent. And I'm nervous. I'll be honest.
The Bills, by Football Outsiders DVOA, are the best defense in football and the number 3 rush defense in football. So this is an interesting test of are those stats legit? Are they holding up against a top 10, maybe top 5 rush offense? The only two times that Buffalo's run defense hasn't looked good this year was against Kansas City in a game they won no problem. And then that Tennessee game where, you had who at that point was probably going for yet another most outstanding offensive player award. So we'll see. Jonathan Taylor's not Derrick Henry, but they've had a pretty good rushing season.
I got to tell you, this is the thing. So the Bills are number 1 in DVOA. Mm-hmm. I don't care. The Bills have 0 legitimate wins. They don't. They don't have any legitimate wins. Go over the schedule.
This
Dolphins,
is why I think it's a really good test.
These are their wins. Dolphins, Washington, Texans, Chiefs, where we were all starting
Chiefs,
to sell.
Chiefs was legitimate.
Chiefs was so not legitimate. Chiefs are broken. Chiefs have been awful. Everybody's been beating the Chiefs, and they just stomped them out.
But they were early on that.
Nah, the Chiefs were that wasn't the Chiefs they beat. I'm sorry.
But we talked about how it was a really big statement win for them because they needed to win that game, and at that point the Chiefs hadn't really started to fall off as bad as they are.
I just
18-39 is the total record of the teams the Bills have beat.
Yeah.
18-39.
Blake, whose team are you on right now? I brought you to the freaking
Dolphins,
Leafs game last night.
I'm not on anyone's team. I'm just
But here's the thing.
Just throwing out stats that you on.
Patriots have the following teams coming up here over the next 4 weeks. Colts, Saints, Patriots, Bucks. That's a good test. And then actually you could kind of extend it to 6 because Panthers and then Patriots again when it comes to defenses. This is the stretch. This is where we kind of find out who the Bills are.
Shaking in my boots. Yum, yum, yum.
Something that you want. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk about Vlad. That's next.
Woo.
Fan Morning Show. Actually, 2 superstars, Vlad and Giannis. How about that?
Two Toronto superstars.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Vlad and Giannis, where will they go out to eat a couple of years from now? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Bungus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
First ever concert.
Okay.
Yeah, the big one here.
See, that's what I mean. You were Mr. Hey, Vic is going to the club. Drinking gin tonic.
Maybe two Guinness.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he's like, I'm switching it up, guys. I have the aux cord and I want you to know how much Red Hot Chili Peppers mean to me.
We got a text about...
I don't know. I think maybe he's weaving a story here where like the earlier songs were like, okay, we're going to get up and get ready for the night. And this is like, okay, you're a little later on now.
Someone's at his place. Yeah. And he's serenading her.
It's time for a downer.
Yeah, with a couple songs, a couple handwritten guitar songs. We got a text from Allison in Toronto. Don't take beer advice from JD. He's the one dude who loves crushing Bud Light. I think Allison, you must know Allison because she texts in a lot.
All I got to say is that Bud Light is, I'm a situational beer guy, okay? And if I'm going to a sporting event and I go to a Blue Jays game and it's 30 plus degrees outside.
Yeah, you're not going to have Guinness.
You're going to have Bud Light. It's the best beer for that. Bud Light is the most versatile beer. It's the, I can have this in basically any situation.
This segment's sponsored by Bud Light.
It's so good. It's perfect. But it's not like, would I rather have, say, I love, there's right now, I'm, you know, I got the thrill, I got the thrills for the pills, you know, like this is a known thing about old JD. Love a Pilsner. And right now, and this is a free one because I love this brewery. Henderson Brewery right now has this Vigo Italian Pilsner. It's one of the greatest things I ever tasted in my entire life. To the point where it was like a lot of money for 24 of these cans, and I still went, get me those. Because it might be seasonal, and I need to make sure that
they're
stocked full.
Triples is better.
Love Henderson. There's like three beers that I would rather have if it was my last beer over a Bud Light. But if you told me, like, hey, you only get one beer for the rest of your life, it would be between Guinness and Bud Light. And that would be a really tough call. That would be a really tough call. Because how could I ever go to the ballpark and be like, Guinness, please?
That's awful.
But having that first Guinness of the day, there's nothing that beats that one. So how dare you not take beer advice from me?
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I've never had a Guinness.
We're going for Guinness, like legitimately right after the show.
I'm not going to have a Guinness at 10.
Well, they won't serve roast one until 11, but.
Okay, well, then we'll wait outside the bar.
I've actually never had a Guinness in my life.
Yeah, I know. We're going to have. And here's the thing. You're like, I'm not going to get beer in the morning. It's like, what are you, a square? Like, you're just going to go have a Guinness, all right? You're going to go have a breakfast beer.
All right.
We're going to treat it like it's Europe.
We're going to have a breakfast beer.
So I'm not going to mention any of the beers that I like by name without being compensated for it.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I want to be compensated by Henderson Brewery.
There is a... But I'm with JD in terms of the crushability factor and the versatility. It's like you also... If you have friends over fairly often, and this used to be the case when I lived with buddies and we would be the place that people would come to watch sports, is you want a beer that is unobjectionable.
Yeah,
not everyone's going to be into the craft stuff. Not everyone's going to be into the hoppy stuff. Not everyone is going to want, you know, 7-8 Guinness.
Can I be honest? If you don't like Bud Light, I actually think that you just don't even drink at all. It's like, it's a staple. It's just a staple.
Crushability is a big factor. And again, to your point, it's like,
How dare you, Allison? If it's Allison Craig.
It's probably.
She didn't sign her last
name. Well, I was going to say.
She texted a bunch last week, too.
She's like this hoity-toity lawyer who probably only drinks like a scotch at the end of a day. And so it's like, what do you know? Well, you're not a person of the people. You're some, like... highfalutin, high-end person. You're not one of us. What do you know? When you go to the Rogers Center, you're in a luxury box somewhere. They're like, oh, we have this Cabernet. And she's like, well, not good enough for me. So, yeah, stay out of it. Stay out of it. Leave the beer for the people. The real people.
Somebody just texted in 4 times in a row.
Okay.
Just the words, Old Milwaukee. Four separate messages.
Nah, that's... That, hey, guess
Old
what?
Milwaukee. Old
that,
Milwaukee.
That person, get help.
Oh, my God.
Spend a couple more dollars. Like, don't live that way. Old Milwaukee, no. I actually think that we should replace being iced with Old Milwaukees because it's like getting iced isn't
getting
that
iced
bad,
is
but
so
having to drink an Old Milwaukee, that's bad. That's a toughie.
Speaking of Old Milwaukee.
Yes, Blake.
That is how Giannis is going to be answering the question,
yes,
where did I used to play?
Yes, Blake.
Sorry, that's a good segue.
Great segue.
Yeah.
We took some time.
We
got
back
there.
On track. That makes the A-list on Monday.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So you have some thoughts, JD, and we want to talk about Vlad in this block a little bit too. And I have some thoughts on kind of now that award season is at a close, kind of wrapping that up from the Blue Jays perspective. But you wanted to touch on something that, I believe it came out Tuesday. There was a great GQ article on Giannis and kind of what drives him and where he's come from and you know, why stay in Milwaukee? Why not? And he was open about, hey, I'd love to play with KD. I'd love to play with Steph Curry, things like that.
I wouldn't.
And he said he stayed in Milwaukee because that's not the easy thing to do. That's the hard path. And that the implication from that or the impression it gives is that was the hardest possible challenge and he accomplished it. Within that article, he was asked, you know, what's next? What's the next challenge?
You want to read the quote?
Yes.
Yes, please.
I'm just trying to give it the proper context because it was a very positive thing about his relationship with Milwaukee and the challenges he's done in the Bucks. And it's been aggregated in certain ways. So I just wanted the context before you read the quote.
Here's what I will say. It's been aggregated for the reasons that you outlined, but also this is the NBA where guys speak pretty freely. And also it's a unbelievable rarity at this point for someone to start their career and finish it in the same place, right? This is LeBron's NBA where you can hop around, you can join different teammates, you get different iterations, a couple of years here, a couple of years there, no big deal. Giannis Antetokounmpo said this, quote, "One challenge was to bring a championship here, and we did it. It was very hard, but we did it. Very, very hard. I just love challenges. What's the next challenge? The next challenge might not be here." It's not that he doesn't live in Milwaukee, he said. Sorry, the quote is kind of broken up. "Me and my family chose to stay in the city that we all love and has taken care of us for now. In 2 years, that might change. I'm being totally honest with you. I'm always honest. I love this city. I love this community. I want to help as much as possible," end quote. I love that you know what the most damning part of this quote is? Is the very end there where he goes, "I love this city. I love this community. I want to help as much as possible," because he realizes he's like, oh boy.
Like, this is going to be all over the internet.
Milwaukee, when they signed Giannis, it was always under the guise of, to the public anyways, to people like me, of, hey, you guys have 2 years to win or else Giannis is gonzo. You have 2 years before Masai Ujiri starts making phone calls and going, what about this, what about that, and this for Giannis. This is the way I'm going to frame it, because we don't have to get into the quote, the whole thing, the blah, 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 because I think given all the context, all the things, right, like this is not an urgent story for Milwaukee. They're still coming off of a championship. Giannis is one of the faces of the NBA. Everything is great for him right now. However, in 2 years, let's just play this out. 2 years from now, what has to happen with the Toronto Raptors for them to be back in the mix for a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo?
So I just want to... I know that the Bucks won the championship last year, and that changes a lot of things. But I want to rewind a little bit to highlight just how funny the Raptors' approach to Giannis has been. And it's not like it's been a secret or anything like that, how they maintain the cap flexibility and the pivot foot and stuff. Last year, when they signed Alex Len, they could have signed him to the minimum for his vet status. They instead used a chunk of the mid-level exception, which has an opportunity cost because that takes away the chance to sign a young guy to a three-year deal or get that kickback that the league gives when you sign a veteran minimum and it bumps that salary down. And the actual difference to Alex Len was only something like 80 grand. The reason that they did that is because that salary is then included differently for salary and trade matching. And that exact salary got them to the dollar number you would need paired with two other contracts to absorb Giannis's exact contract amount. So they did like cap trickery and like at the margins nonsense.
Anybody else know? Like, no, is that like a narrative or is this just your galaxy brain? Yeah,
okay. Well, I mean, everybody knew it because Blake said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was, it's not.
I was like,
chicken or egg.
It wasn't a narrative of like, oh, Giannis told the Raptors that he's going to demand a trade. Mm-hmm. It was more, I think it was probably like a little tongue in cheek of like, hey, look, it just works out. We spent.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. But that's kind of like. A player of Giannis' stature, and this is where some of the discussion around the Raptors this year, and we're going to talk Raptors in the next block, about, hey, well, you saved everything and you maintained flexibility and you didn't take on contracts to have cap space and flexibility to take a run at Giannis, and then he wasn't there. But Giannis is so good that, yeah, of course you do. It's not a big deal it's a big deal because now you don't have Giannis and you built on that what if. But he's such a generational talent that, of course, if you have a 0.1% chance at him, you keep that possibility alive. So in terms of where the Raptors need to be to make that a possibility, I think it has a lot more to do with what's going on in Milwaukee. I think, how do the Bucks run it back this year? How do they look longer term? But if you're the Raptors, you have to be absolutely certain, and not for yourselves, but for Giannis, that if you make this trade and assume certain pieces have to go out to make it happen, you are, if not the title favorite, like a top two or three title favorite.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I
don't see it that way.
Okay. So this, I do, and I think this is why, again, the Raptors prioritize winning and being competitive as they're building, even if some think it makes sense to completely bottom out. This stat, like where they are now and where they might be next year as Scottie Barnes and OG and Trent improve and stuff, is keeps them closer to being attractive to one of these I want to be traded guys than being a completely bottomed out team. Like, I don't think Giannis is going to want to come and play with a bunch of 22-year-olds.
Nope. But this is where I guess maybe we diverge a little bit. I don't think that he wants to come here and play with a bunch of 22-year-olds. But I think that here's where I like the Raptors in this scenario. This fake scenario that's 2 years from now, right?
Because people are probably tuning in thinking this is a real thing. No, this is fake.
I don't like where Milwaukee does project 2 years from now. I don't think Drew Holiday is going to hold up. And if you remember this, the way that they won that championship, huge part of it was Drew Holiday. I'll never understand why he went and played Team USA that summer. I guess I'll understand it is that he wanted to go win an Olympic gold medal. But that was a lot of wear on, like, the tires of Drew Holiday, a player who has not been able to stay healthy and a guy who I think is going to age really, 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 really poorly given his track record. Chris Middleton, I've always liked, but Chris Middleton is the ultimate. One night he's got 27 points on efficient shooting, and then the next night he's got 13, and you're like, where the hell was Chris Middleton tonight? The Bucks' depth is going to be a challenge. I don't think that they're going to be able to attract players there necessarily, and they're not a team that looks like that they're built for long-term success. 2 years from now, what I like about the idea of Giannis getting out of town to Toronto is, number one, is Masai Ujiri. But is number two, just accumulating assets. Mm-hmm. Do the thing that the Cleveland Cavaliers did, where it's like Scottie Barnes potentially plays the role of Kyrie, where he is the emerging young star player that you want to play with, that you look at and say, hey, that guy can take a lot of the like defensive load off of me. That guy can take some playmaking responsibilities off of me. Hell, this guy kind of in some ways reminds me of a younger me, and I think I can actually help him unlock a different part of his game. And the rest of it is, what have the Raptors accumulated from an asset standpoint that they can move off of this roster where Giannis and Masai Ujiri get to have a shared vision, where he doesn't feel like he's joining something, but that he gets to help create something. And Masai Ujiri is the perfect guy to create something with, the perfect collaborator to create something with. So that's the way I'm viewing it. I actually think if the Raptors are really good, Blake, when you're saying that they're a top two team or whatever, then I don't think Giannis is coming here, because that's the whole scenario where you go, no, now that's the easy way. Now he's joining something. Now he's doing what he already said he hates.
Sorry, I meant that Giannis would push you to that level, not that they're already that level.
Oh, okay.
Like, you have to be at that stature after the trade.
Oh, okay. So, anyways, this is why I wanted to do the segment today, is that I kind of wonder if that is Masai Ujiri's play over the next little while.
I mean, look, you
not specifically just with Giannis, but with other superstars too, to be like, accumulate, and then collaborate. Accumulate and collaborate. That's the new plan.
Yeah, and I've tried to say that, like, this is why you don't bottom out completely and why you stay somewhat competitive and why, you know, the asset accumulation is like, yeah, if you had a million first round, like, if you're the Thunder and you have all those picks, that's one thing, but no one's going to want to go there right now. So, yeah, and then in terms of building, you look, and they still owe, after this year, $205 million to Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Brooke Lopez. Mm-hmm. They don't project to have cap space next summer or the summer after.
Even when they do have cap space, nobody's coming to Milwaukee.
I mean, they might if they're like coming off a couple titles and stuff like that, but they don't have cap space until 2023.
Nobody's going to Milwaukee.
Until 2024.
Yep, nobody's going to Milwaukee.
I don't know how you keep building with that. Like, you got to hope.
Who's the biggest free agent Milwaukee has ever signed? Like, do they even have a Hedo Turkoglu level guy on there? Like, I'm serious. I don't think they do. Like, I'm trying to think. I'm a pretty big NBA fan. I've been watching this league for a long time. I don't remember one person of significance ever signing with Milwaukee as an unrestricted free agent. Like, actually walking and going to that city. Not one.
Yeah, and I mean, even their depth guys that may you look and it's like, hey, maybe they could be something, you know, that comes up. And so Lopez is 33 and Holiday's 31 and Middleton's 30 already. You need the young guys to kind of come along. And even like a guy like Pat Connaughton is in his sixth or seventh year at this point. You know, Grayson Allen is a nice piece for them and a nice fit, but he's already gotten the raise.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look and it's like, okay, Dante DiVincenzo is nice. Jordan Noir is nice. But are those guys keeping a title window open? I'm not sure. We haven't seen Milwaukee develop that kind of guy to that level yet. So, I mean, Giannis and Chris Middleton. So
yes,
maybe we have seen them develop to that level. But so, yeah, it's an interesting question about where they can go and where they can keep going. I think a little bit of this discussion is, I mean, it's a totally fair discussion to have. It's an NBA. This stuff happens all the time. It's obviously a little wish casting.
Yeah, this is sports radio.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're fantasy booking it here. But it's, I mean, it's not, would it surprise anyone if any superstar wanted out at some point? No, it shouldn't. Shouldn't ever surprise anyone.
That's what I'm saying. And that's why I liked this, and that's why I was allowed to dream of this again yesterday, which was fun because all I could think of was, if I'm Giannis, what do I want? What do I want? Where am I going to go? I think that it used to be maybe Giannis would have taken a, I'm pairing up with someone who's a superstar, but now he has that championship. And that's what I mean is, what's the next challenge? That's what I thought about last night is, what's the next challenge? He did it and it was very, very hard. The next challenge to me is adding something on top of it. It's not just playing basketball. He's already proven that he can be the best basketball player on a championship winning team. He's already proven that he can develop into one of the game's most unstoppable and feared players in the league. He can be a defensive player of the year. He can be an MVP caliber player. He can do it all. But what can he build his own team? Can he do the, you know, it's one thing to be, if you played video games, you know, you do the creative player mode where you're the creative player, star player mode. And then maybe you want to win a championship as GM mode. And that's Giannis, is that this is all his reality. This is all his world. So I would just, maybe the partnership he's looking for, all I'm saying, is not another superstar. It's an executive. And I would love for that to be the case because the Raptors have the best one.
All right. We don't have time for the Vlad stuff. Nope. Yeah. So, Vlad had a really cool season. Shohei deserved the MVP.
We'll do more later. We have Pete Walker on the show today.
Having two of the three top MVP guys and the Cy Young Award winner is still very, very cool.
Yeah.
And the Shohei thing always sure makes me think of Sadaharu Oh, and what if they let him pitch? And what if there was more transfer from Japanese baseball to American baseball back then? Modern day Oh.